It may be hard to believe, but fewer than half of all the films produced during the first three decades of the 20th century still survive. So when a trove of American silent films that have not been seen anywhere for nearly a century does show up, in New Zealand, of all places, it's major news. And what's even more exciting is that now you can see them, too. The National Film Preservation Foundation has come out with an incredible DVD set called Lost and Found, American Treasures from the New Zealand Film Archive, which includes features by John Ford and Alfred Hitchcock and many other surprises like Gene the Collie, America's first canine movie star. Joining me now to put it in perspective is Scott Simon, a professor at UC Davis. He is the curator of the collection and also wrote the film notes for it. Welcome to our show.
Well, thanks for having me, Leonard. Silent film and radio are not the most natural of pairings, so it's good to talk about it.
Well, how did these American films wind up in New Zealand?
Well, you know, American film were so widely seen in the silent era all around the world because I think something like 95% of the films on New Zealand screens in the late 1920s were from America. And, you know, even in other countries that didn't speak English, it was pretty easy to just replace the silent film intertitles and distribute them. So it was the great time for American film around the world.
And haven't some films also been popping up in other places, parts of the world, like the former communist countries, where they were just buried for a time?
Well, exactly. I mean, as you said, most of the first three decades of American film are lost. Probably about 80%. The statistics are not completely clear. But since film was distributed worldwide and collectors kept them, it's one of the places that films can be found now. The wonderful thing about New Zealand, of course, though, is that since they spoke English, the intertitles for the films are in English, whereas if you find these films in, you know, China or Russia, they have the language of the nation. So it's a little bit more complicated to bring them back for American audiences.
But how come people were unaware that they had them in New Zealand?
Well,
how
you
were
know,
they found?
We say that films are lost, and that's a kind of shorthand way of saying that they weren't known except locally. That is, the New Zealanders knew they had a vault, which they kept excellent care of all these old reels of film, but, you know, this is actually quite expensive. That's what the National Film Preservation Foundation does, is raise money to preserve these films. So the New Zealanders naturally wanted to preserve New Zealand films with the limited resources they had. So so the films were known, but not known internationally.
They are expensive to store because they're flammable?
Well, expensive to preserve. I mean, the original films, of course, as you say, are flammable, so they have to be copied onto modern film stock and new negatives made. And, you know, as the years go by, working with film as opposed to digital is, you know, more and more a specialized skill.
Do you think these discoveries will change our opinions of films and filmmakers of the time?
Well, they add to it. I mean, the thing that's kind of amazing is just how entertaining and interesting these previously completely unknown films are. I think the John Ford film called Upstream, which is on the Lost and Found DVD.
From 1927. Wasn't that assumed lost until just now?
Exactly. I think all the films in this project, and the National Film Preservation Foundation has brought back 176 previously lost American films. Just everyone assumed that they didn't exist, and that's true for this John Ford film as well, Upstream, it was called.
Well, few would think of him now in connection with this kind of straightforward backstage comedy.
It's true. I mean, that's why when you asked if it changed film history, in some ways it does, because this film shows a side of John Ford that we really hadn't seen. For me, John Ford's best moments are these little throwaway moments on the edges of his pictures, and Upstream in some ways is made up entirely of those. So it's a much more charming side of John Ford than we had seen before.
There's also a Hitchcock film, The White Shadow, first surviving feature credited to him, but wouldn't that have been made in England?
Well, it was. We're sort of stretching the American side of thing with this. What was found in New Zealand was the American release print of a film that Hitchcock wrote and and was assistant director and art director and probably editor for. This is the American version of this. And it's actually, unfortunately, only the first three of the six reels, but it's pretty entertaining as it is, and the conclusion of the film is summarized in intertitles on the DVD.
Is it Hitchcockian?
Well, you know, it sort of depends on how you look at it. It does have a kind of doubled woman character, a woman who plays two people, which, you know, shows up again in Vertigo and elsewhere. So, you know, if you use your imagination, it can feel Hitchcockian.
The Mabel Normand films will revive her reputation. Can you tell us about One in a Cupboard from 1914?
Well, this is another good find in New Zealand. That Mabel Normand, if she's remembered at all, is as a early comedienne, mainly for the Keystone Company, which made slapstick comedies. And One in a Cupboard turns out to be the first surviving film that she directed. And, you know, there were actually a few more women directors in the early years than there were in Hollywood, but it's a good find to have her first directing work.
How old was she when she directed this film?
Oh, boy, that's a good question, but I think in her early 20s. I can't remember exactly, but
so
young.
Fairly
but
young. But
I mean, I think she had been in, I don't know, 60 films or something. They really churned them out in those days.
And I guess she got the opportunity because she was so popular. She'd also did a series of films with Fatty Arbuckle, didn't she?
That's right, yes, and worked with Charlie Chaplin as well. I mean, I think she co-directed some of Charlie Chaplin's first films as well. So,
my guess is Scott Simon, the curator of and film notes writer for Lost and Found, American Treasures from the New Zealand Film Archive. It is being released by the National Film Preservation Foundation. The set includes industrial or educational films like Birth of a Hat from 1920. They're not quite commercials, not quite narratives. Were they popular at the time?
Right. Well, and one of the things we tried to do with this DVD of these lost films was to show the range of different sorts of films that people saw in the early years, because one tends to think that you saw either short comedies or longer features. But there were all sorts of other things being shown, and as you mentioned, Birth of a Hat is, you know, essentially a sponsored film made by the Stetson Company to show you how a hat is made.
Did this follow Birth of a Nation? Was it released?
Birth of a Hat.
I know, but was it released after Birth of a Nation?
It was, yeah. So, I mean, people would have remembered that. It was probably released about 1920. Yeah, there were all sorts of plays on Birth of a Nation after that. The Breath of a Nation is another film on an earlier National Film Preservation Foundation DVD. The Breath of a Nation is about Prohibition, so there were lots of jokes about that.
Now, where would these films be shown? Would they be shown as between feature films at a movie theater, or would they be shown elsewhere?
Well, all of the above. They would be given for free to theater owners. So theater owners would use a sponsored film like Birth of a Hat as a filler, but also people who were, you know, selling hats would have screenings. You know, silent films were pretty easy to show when you didn't have to hook up sound, so that films were shown in, you know, schools and churches and on the sides of barns and everywhere.
There's something hypnotic about the six-minute film Lyman H. Howe's Famous Ride on a Runaway Train from 1921. Who was Lyman H. Howe?
Lyman H. Howe, who made this first film on the DVD set, was a touring showman who initially in the 1890s was touring with phonograph records because it was such a wonder. But then he added movies. And the interesting thing about the film on this set, The Runaway Train, is that it combines a 1921 film found in New Zealand with the soundtrack, which had been preserved at the Library of Congress. So it's quite an early sound film, and the sound is a lot of train sounds. But this is a film that puts you at the front of a runaway train, and even today it's quite hard not to sort of lean in your seat as you watch it.
And a review at the time raved, "This is a picture with a real thrill. It takes your breath away. It is everything it is cracked up to be." There was also, surprising to me anyway, a lot of color. Now, I knew that films were tinted, often hand-tinted, but The Love Charm is in Technicolor. Were they already experimenting with various color processes in the 20s?
Right. There's The Love Charm, which is this kind of one reel South Seas adventure film, South Seas being Los Angeles, was filmed in the two-color Technicolor process. So Technicolor, before they did what's known as three-strip in the early 30s, had a two-color process, which, you know, is surprisingly successful considering that it's just recording sort of two of the three sides of the color spectrum, which it did on two separate strips of film and combined them. So when you find an original print, as this one was, the color, you know, you wonder, you know, gosh, where are the blues or where, but it still looks quite good.
There's also some animated films. Was animation popular in the early days of movies?
Well, I think you pretty much couldn't go to the movies from the mid-1910s through the end of the silent era without seeing a cartoon and a newsreel. And so once animators figured out how to streamline the cartoon techniques, which took a few years, cartoons were everywhere. Some are pretty unfunny, but some are quite good, and we tried to put this one that's fairly good called Happy Go Luckies on the DVD.
From 1923.
Right, by Paul Terry, who's known for his Terry tunes.
So was this an early Terry tune, in effect?
It's an early Aesop's Fables, which are no reason anyone would remember them now, but there were about 450 of them made in the silent era, which theoretically would arrive 7 minutes from the start at a little motto theoretically based on, the Greek fable or Aesop.
Is there a bit of irony here? These films last 100 years or more, and yet today digital processes go obsolete within 10 years or so.
Well, it is true. These films now that are being found around the world are surviving because one single nitrate print has not burned or deteriorated. And, you know, if they're kept in fairly tolerable conditions, early films will last, you know, well over a century. And as you say, although digital media can be migrated from place to place, it's quite hard to find a machine that will play videotape from 20 years ago.
Well, you say that if they're not handled well, they can suffer from the equivalent of spontaneous combustion?
Well, it is true. That's why it's kind of a challenge technically for the National Film Preservation Foundation to have brought these early films back, because, you know, now they're hazardous cargo, and, you know, that's part of the expense of making new preservation copies of these films. But they last a long time, kept well. Cool and dry conditions. If you happen to have a film in your basement, that's what to do with it.
How many films were found in the New Zealand archive?
Well, brought back were 176 of them, and one of the interesting things about that is that about 70% of those turned out to be the only known surviving copies in the world. So these are, you know, essentially lost films now found. And I should say that for those who can't see the DVD, that there are a lot of these films from the project, about 30 more, that are available to be streamed and seen on the National Film Preservation Foundation's website.
But can we expect to see more DVD releases?
Well, I'm not sure. At least for now, there's the Lost and Found DVD, and more on the website. But
have more information about this DVD set on our show page at wnyc.org. Were all of these films in good enough shape that they didn't have to go through serious processes to save them, or were some of them in pretty bad shape?
There were a whole range. Some of them look sparkling brand new, and some of them you can see both on the DVD and on the website that there are hints of deterioration. So they were, you know, just caught before they got too deteriorated.
Scott Simon is a professor at UC Davis, curator and film notes writer for Lost and Found, American Treasures from the New Zealand Film Archives. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Leonard. Take care.